Hello, this is Chris English welcoming you to another edition of At Home This Morning, our programme of interviews about matters of interest and importance for both our older listeners and those not so old, in and around the city of Brighton and Hove. In this edition of the programme, we'll be hearing the latest on the forthcoming season at Chichester Festival of Theatre, which is, of course, just a train, bus or car ride away, and actually a lot nicer than the West End of London. There'll also be more on the Bluebell Railway's recreation of the British Rail Sulky service, with interviews from twin brothers from Portslade, as well as a long-standing enthusiast, all of whom actually travelled on the final British Rail train. Plus, a few notes of music from the railway's own brass band. We'll also be hearing from Gordon Rushton about the refurbishment of the Brighton Bell, which should be back on our tracks before very long. But we get started with a look forward to the new season at Chichester Festival of Theatre. And when I met up with the head of planning and projects, Georgina Ray, I first asked her what her job entailed.
My job title is head of planning and projects, and that in itself is quite a new role at Chichester, and it's quite a diverse role. So I support the licensing and the paperwork of productions before we move them into actually physically producing them. So lots of contracts. An element of my job is supporting the building itself. We've just had a bit of an office move and shuffling things around because we're an ever-increasing number of people working here, and just making sure that we're resilient and have the people we need to keep functioning to our absolute best. And then the projects element of it is really what might come along. So when we have projects that might sit either outside of the season itself or are complementing the season, then that might be something that I oversee.
And do you get involved in the season itself, choosing what you're going to put on?
Well, Daniel Evans and Rachel Tackley, our artistic and our executive director, very much lead on what the shape of the season will be and what the productions are, and I support them in that process. So there might be a play that they're excited about, and I might go and investigate whether the rights are available, whether somebody else is thinking of doing it, and maybe we do it as a production with another theatre. So it's more of a support side to the ideas that they have together.
I mean, it's an amazing complex thing, isn't it, putting on a show? People buy their tickets and come and put their bums on seats, but there's a lot to it.
There's a huge amount to it. And actually what I find interesting within my role is that a lot of that starts months and years ahead of seeing a production actually be in the brochure and seeing the artwork and then putting it on sale to the general public and announcing it to them. So we're already having conversations about what our musical might be next year and the year after, and other pieces of work that perhaps Daniel and Rachel are excited by, but the rights aren't available now. So we'll keep an eye on them and we'll try and pick them up in the future. And another thing that we do is that we do commission new work. So another part of what I do with Daniel and Rachel is actually connecting with the agents of writers to get the paperwork in place so that they might write us a wonderful new play, and that might not actually come to fruition into the season for another 2 or 3 years down the line while we develop it and do some workshopping of it and things. So there's a whole range of things that happen even before we know what might actually be in the season. And then there's this really exciting time where there are slots in the calendar, and we've got two wonderful theatre spaces here, the Festival Theatre, which seats about 1,300 people per night, and the Minerva Theatre, which is our more studio-based theatre, which has a capacity of about 300. And we have this really exciting time where we think about what the year ahead might be. And Daniel and Rachel literally talk about having post-it notes on their desk where they say, "Oh, maybe that one, or maybe that one next to that one." And then lots of practicalities come into play. And then another huge job starts, which is about making those specific productions happen. So this year we've got a huge range of productions, ranging from our big summer musical, which is Me and My Girl, but we've also got another musical in the Festival Theatre, Flowers for Mrs. Harris, which is a new British musical, which Daniel previously directed in Sheffield, but he's coming at it again and having a reworking of it here. Me and My Girl will be led by Matt Lucas and have full-size musical company. But then at the other end of the spectrum, we have plays in the Minerva. We're opening with a double bill, two plays by a wonderful playwright called Debbie Tucker Green. And the two plays that we're putting together in the double bill there, Random and Generations. Random itself is actually a one-woman play. And Generations has a cast of, I think, eight, and a South African choir accompanying it. So we have a real diversity of what is on our stages, and that's the fun bit of having so many opportunities to make lots of different work.
And do you get a chance to see things in the rehearsal and coming together?
Yeah, I think that's it's a real treat if you're working in theatre to be able to see the production in development and to have those. It's a become a bit of a buzz thing to talk about a journey, but to see something go from a contract to script to then have a team of stage management starting to do all the prep work and then have everybody in rehearsals on day one, and then you'll see designs for what the set is going to look like, and then start to see that move into real life as well, and when it all actually comes together and you see everybody has gone through their technical rehearsals and the orchestra have had their rehearsals, and then you see the whole thing come together is just wonderful. That's the excitement of it.
How long does that take?
It depends really on the size of the production. Most of our productions rehearse for 4 or 5 weeks. So if it's a new production or a musical, it tends to be 5 weeks of rehearsals and then another week of technical rehearsals. So I suppose 6 weeks from first rehearsal to when the audience would see the first preview. If it's a classic play that we're reviving, we might not need quite so long in rehearsal because we know what the text is and we're not rewriting and developing as we move forward, but albeit that it will be a brand new production because we're lucky enough to make brand new work. So,
and you've got a reputation for putting on excellent musicals in particular. You mentioned Me and My Girl this year. Previously, Half a Sixpence, Charlie Stemp is the star of the West End.
He is, and he's actually star of Broadway now. He's gone to Broadway as well. So, yeah, he's had a stratospheric rise, and his career's, you know, clearly going to be a really exciting thing to watch. And it's lovely to know and to connect with people who've had the opportunity to work on our stages and then see where they move on to next. We had Ian McKellen here playing King Lear last season in the Minerva, and he tweeted a photograph of himself here in the 1960s, and this very young Ian McKellen standing in front of the Festival Theatre to then being Sir Ian McKellen on stage in the Minerva. And indeed he will revise that role in the West End this summer, or late summer into the autumn, and it's amazing to see how people connect with Chichester and feel like lots of people feel like they had their early opportunities on the stages here, and it's a wonderful opportunity for them, but really exciting for us as well to see where people go from here.
And talking about where people go from here, Charlie Stemp's not the exception. He tends to be the rule, doesn't he?
I suppose it's twofold. We work with brilliant people, so they're already on a trajectory of being brilliant, and we're really lucky that they want to come and work with us, and I think also the reputation that CFT has, we hope, helps support them in developing their career as well.
I next asked Regina what else was in the new season's programme.
Well, first production in the Festival Theatre is Present Laughter by Noel Coward, and Rufus Hound will be starring that, as well as Tracy Ann Oberman, who was in Fiddler on the Roof last season. She'll also be joining the company of Present Laughter. And that's going to be directed by Sean Foley. I think it will be a really fun way to kick off and open the season. And as I mentioned before, in the Minerva, we'll open with this double bill of Debbie Tucker Green plays, Random and Generations. In the festival, we've got Penelope Keith coming to do a glorious play, The Chalk Garden, which I'm hugely excited about. We go into Me and My Girl with Matt Lucas and Caroline Quentin in the festival. Flowers for Mrs. Harris, which I mentioned earlier, another musical there. And then we've got the first programming of work for a family audience in the Festival Theatre with a new production of The Midnight Gang, which is David Wellington's children's book, which Dale Rooks will direct. Dale's been directing our youth theatre productions over for years now, and hugely successfully, and to huge acclaim. So it's really exciting to see Dale now be programming work into the festival season, and it's a brand new production and specifically for a family audience, which we do want to make sure is really at the heart of part of our season. And over in the Minerva we have The Country Wife, so glorious restoration comedy, some good fun there for everybody. We have a beautiful play called The Meeting, which is a new play by Charlotte Jones, and I think would be a really, really beautiful piece of work. Then we've got a revival of a play called Cock by Mike Bartlett, cast of four and directed by Kate Hewitt. Now you're testing me. Then we go into Copenhagen, which is 20 years since the original production of Copenhagen. It'll be directed by Michael Blakemore, who directed the original production. So written by Michael Frayn. We're very lucky to have the rights and the opportunity to present it here. And then our final performance in the Minerva will be a play called The Watsons by Laura Wade, directed by Samuel West, which takes an unfinished Jane Austen novel, and Laura takes that as the starting point of her play, and there's a conversation about who owns that story when Jane Austen hasn't completed it and what the author's role is within that. Exciting.
You're very enthusiastic about everything that's going on here. Is that a requirement for the post? I mean, do you have to be enthusiastic?
I don't think it's about my post. I think the whole organisation are excited about what the festival season is. I think Daniel and Rachel create a real excitement about the work. It was their first season together last year, and that was hugely successful. We broke lots of records within our box office takings and all the numbers side of things. But we also saw thousands of people from age 0 to 92 come through the door. And when you see people really enjoy the work, I think that really ignites an excitement in everybody about what we are doing. And what I find really wonderful here at CFT is that I hope we're good at what we do, but we're also constantly thinking about how we can improve those things and what other exciting opportunities there might be. And I think for us the most important thing is balancing having diverse work on stage, but making sure that that work is available and exciting for a real diverse audience as well. So there's something for everybody within the season, and I think that's an exciting thing to be part of. So
talk about something for everybody. Yeah. A lot of people would perhaps associate Chichester, wrongly in my opinion, with people with grey hair, the older generation, let's say. Is that true?
The older generation are hugely important, and it's hugely important that we give the older generation the opportunity to see really exciting theatre, and they're certainly part of our audience. But balanced with that, CFT has the largest youth theatre in the country. We have over 800 participants in our youth theatre. So again, one of the glorious things that I think about CFT is that it brings together lots of different groups of people. So there might absolutely be a percentage of our audience who are an older generation, but they might well be sitting next to one of our prologue members. We have a scheme for 16 to 25 year olds who can join as a member and pay £5 for a ticket. So you're giving the opportunity for different groups of people to sit in the same space and enjoy the same art. And we have a number of different schemes promoting opportunity for everybody. You know, we do want to make sure we're supporting an older generation who might be part of the demographic of, or certainly are part of the demographic of Chichester. And we introduced last year something called our Buddies Scheme, which we're conscious that for some people who might feel isolated or might be concerned that they don't feel physically able enough to come to the theatre, it might be quite a daunting process, but they might still want to come and enjoy their evening or day at the theatre. So we have what we call a buddy scheme, where we have a group of people who are signed up to be buddies, and somebody could call and say they want to have a buddy with them, and we'll pair them with somebody to share that day with who can support them through being here at CFT. As I said, work for a family audience is part of what we're programming now, and I think it's important that's not just parents and children, that's parents, grandchildren, and making sure there's the opportunity for generations to enjoy the work together, as well as maybe finding work that feels more specifically relevant to different groups of people.
And if people have never been to Chichester Festival Theatre, if you can imagine such a thing, why should they come here and not go to London or Brighton or Eastbourne?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily about not going elsewhere, because I think the wonderful, you know, the best way to enjoy art is to see lots of different things. What I think we do pride ourselves on here is the quality of our work. So we do try and make sure that we are absolutely giving our audience top quality productions, interesting, exciting work. Like spot conversation, give people just a glorious day or evening out. We also have cafe here and a restaurant here as well, so lots of our audience make it more of an event than just coming to the theatre. So people do come and maybe with groups of friends meet for dinner in the restaurant beforehand and then have either their matinee or their evening performance at the theatre. And I think it's also important to say that the Chichester around us is really a beautiful place to spend some time as well. We're in the middle of Oaklands Park, which is a beautiful green area here. We're just a stone's throw away from the high street of Chichester. There's lots of lovely restaurants, there's lots of lovely other things to do, visiting the cathedral, visiting museums here and the art gallery here, Pallant Art Gallery and Novi Museum. There's lots of things to enjoy coming to Chichester for, of course, one of those being a visit to the Festival Theatre, but more broadly it's a lovely place to spend some time as well, so lots of our audience might come and spend a bit more time here than just coming to the theatre.
And the buddy scheme, how can people get more? Do they just ring up the box office?
Yeah, they can just contact the box office or ring our stage door, or there is an email address as well, actually, I think, which is our access email address, which is access@cft.org.uk. And there's some information on our website as well. But it's something we're really proud of and excited by, because it is important to make sure everybody feels comfortable. And I certainly know I've got relatives who would appreciate having a friendly face and a helping hand at the theatre. I think that's really important.
And is Me and My Girl going to follow in the tradition of a fiddler and half a sixpence?
We were really excited about it and hope that it will. It's glorious music. Matt Lucas is really exciting casting. We're just in auditions at the moment, so we're just casting the rest of the cast, and it's a great piece of work. It's a really beautiful musical, lots of good music, and should be really good fun.
I was talking to Georgina Ray from the Chichester Festival Theatre. Now, a couple of programmes ago, we heard from a trio of Bluebell Railway people about their plans to commemorate what became known as the British Rail Sulky Service before the line from Lewes to East Grinstead finally closed more than 60 years ago. Well, when that re-commemoration took place recently, I was delighted to be invited along. And I first spoke to one of the people who were actually on the final train all those many years ago.
Well, the day of the last train, I was living with my parents in Bennington in Surrey and working in Grants of Croydon, a long-gone department store. And my colleague who worked in the travel bureau said, "You going on the last train to Lewes on Sunday?" And I said, "Well, I thought about it." And he said, "Well, I read about it in Daily Telegraph and the battle to get the line reopened and how unsuccessful they'd been." I said, "Yes, I'll go." He said, "How are you going to do that?" He said, "Well, what you do, well, you have to go to church in the morning, 9 o'clock, and then you must be at home for Sunday lunch because your parents will insist upon it." And of course, on a Sunday, their local shops are open on a Sunday in 1958. So he said, "Well, meet up at East Croydon, and you can meet me there." So I got on my push bike after lunch and push bike the 2.5 miles to East Croydon, left my bike by the parcels office and paid the princely sum of 1 shilling to leave it there. And we met up and said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "We're going to get a cheap day return to Lewes because you've got to come back again." Little realising that going by that route was technically illegal because it wasn't valid. We were supposed to buy a ticket at East Grinstead and only allow as far as Lewes. Anyway, we thought we'd risk it. And so we both bought cheap day returns to Lewes and duly got on the 2:08 from Victoria, hauled by a Midland tank engine and a number of bullied coaches. And other people had done the same, apparently, so we all got on. When we got into East Grinstead, the high-level platforms, because the high-level station was still operational in those days, and walked down to the lower level, and there was this great big crowd. There must have been about 1,000 people down there, maybe even more. I said, we're not going to get anywhere near the ticket office. You won't get a ticket. I said, well, I don't have to, do we? We've already got one from through one. We can come back from Lewes to direct to East Croydon. So we really went down, and there was great more of this great melee on the platform. And sitting on the opposite platform, we just come in with a six-coach train, the engine 80154, which was the last engine built at Brighton Works. And it's also the driver's last time in traffic. He was retiring the following day. So we thought, we weren't going to get on that. So what are you going to do? So, fortunately, the engine came off, went over into the yard, picked up three more coaches. They assembled them together, and they put the V, the floral V, on the front of the engine, which was, and backed the whole lot up and into the down platform, and we all swarmed on. I thought, we're not going to get on here. So let's go down the back. So went down to the last two coaches at the very end and got in there and worked our way down, and I finished up in the very last compartment in the very last train to leave East Grinstead. I'm virtually much a last man leaving East Grinstead by simply sheer luck.
There's a carnival atmosphere here today with a band in the background. So what was it like when you got to Lewes or leaving East Grinstead? Were there celebrations?
Oh, yes, there were lots of people along the line side. We left East Grinstead going back to this last train. We pulled out the station, engine whistling, people were waving, and I was waving people out the window. And we went, and a great fusillade of detonators going off, bang, 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 you know, right up to the viaduct. And then we sailed across the viaduct, saying goodbye, and somebody was filming the last train leaving East Grinstead going south. And I think if you look carefully, there's an arm waving out the window, and I've got a funny feeling that's mine. But we didn't stop at Kingscote, because Kingscote was still closed. That didn't reopen in 1956. The next stop was West Hoathly. And it was a fair old crowd from the village there, and all taking pictures as usual, but it was a brief stop. And then on through the tunnel, and I looked out through the tunnel, looking down at the track, little realising that about 60 years later I'd be putting it back again. And on to Halstead Canes, where we understood the Macmillan family joined the train, said then Prime Minister, the grandchildren. And he was also director of the Great Western Railway, by the way.
Oh, right.
And he, went down to Sheffield Park. They got off here, and Lady Macmillan was out. Macmillan's out the front, and he collected the grandchildren and took them back to Birch Grove. And as we left here, I looked at the goodyard and went, "Well, you know, we'll never see that again," you know. And over the A275, the next stop was Newington Chailey, where I first saw. That's when I saw Miss Bessemer. I got, of course, saw her talking to Chris Campbell.
And, of course, Madge Bessemer was the person.
Yes, who saved the line originally, that's right. She saved the line. It was her who found the original Act of Parliament, which stated they had to run four trains each way a day. The railway company couldn't just take it. They had to get this act repealed. That's why they had the sulky service, these four trains each way a day, as specified by the Act, until the Act was repealed. Then they could close the line, which is what they did. They did have an inquiry, proved heavy losses, because the trains were, say, run out of step. You couldn't book through to any other station on the system, and the trains ran at such awkward hours that virtually no part of enthusiasts actually used them. So the end came in the end. It was going to be obvious that it was going to happen. And so when we decided eventually to see what we could do. At that time, rumours were still going about preservation, because nobody had preserved a standard gauge railway. This was the first one in the world. Not people didn't realise that, but it is. And we got together, so they called a meeting at Haywards. We were able to lease the line eventually, just 4.5 miles between here and just outside Halstead Canes, because Halstead Canes was still used by British Railways. There was still electric train service into Halstead Canes until 1963, so we couldn't go into there. We eventually let us use this one platform, which we did at the end of 1961. But we leased the line for the first 5 years for £2,250 a year. And we bought one engine, or somebody else bought one engine, Stepney, and two coaches for us, delivered in steam for £650. And we've still got them.
And it's still going strong.
Well, Stepney's in the shell at the moment, wants an overhaul, and the two coaches at that time are being overhauled. Well, one is. Well, the other one would take a bit longer. Whether we can do that in time for 2020, I doubt it. It's going to be a long job. It takes 5 years to restore a railway carriage. But we'd like to get I think it's Fenchurch up and down next, because it's still a bit anniversary. 135 years, I think it is, in a couple of years' time, so we have to do something.
The Bluebell Railway still, and Roger and Kenneth Dudman. Roger, you were both on the last train.
Yes, with their older brother, Ray, who unfortunately we lost some time ago.
What was the atmosphere like on that special train?
Very solemn, I think.
So it was a bit quiet, was it?
Yes, I think it was. I can't remember anybody talking much, but I was looking out the window most of the time.
How old were you at that time?
Nine.
Because you're twins, aren't you?
Yeah.
When you got to Lewes, what happened?
We didn't go to Lewes because we got off at Newark and Chailey.
We went up to East Grinstead.
Yeah. We went from Chailey, Newark and Chailey to East Grinstead, and we weren't told we were going on it. It was a surprise.
Right. You also knew Madge Bessemer?
Yes, very well. My mother do little jobs for her and that, and right up until she passed away.
What sort of lady was she?
Very stern. She wouldn't take any nonsense from anybody.
Why do you think she wanted to save the railway?
Because her grandfather was one of the directors of London, Lewes and East Grinstead Railway, or the London-Brighton Railway. So she had all the paperwork, told them they'd done it unofficially. They closed the line unofficially. And she knew that, and she made them open it until they got permission to legally close it.
So Ken, do you know why they called it the sulky service?
Well, because it ran when it wasn't really required. It wasn't run early in the morning for the school children or the workers, but it was run after that, after 9 o'clock. So nobody wanted to use the train at that time in the morning, unless they were going shopping. It became known as the sulky service, and because it ran at odd times, and it never connected up with anywhere at East Grinstead on another train or at Lewes.
So it was just hopeless, really.
It was a hopeless service they put on.
Do you think that was deliberate?
Yes. Oh, yes, yes, definitely deliberate.
And what's it like back here on a train of the same vintage?
Quite good, because I'm a volunteer on the railway. I work at Kingscote Station, so it's the only line I would work on. And I can remember the good old days when we first started here, right up to now. It's been a part of their life for nearly 70 years. So.
And you enjoy it?
Yes. I've got a lot of colleagues that I meet every week and people I know. If I didn't have them, I wouldn't have many friends outside the railway, I don't think.
Do you think it's right that the line should be here? Do you think it should be a proper service running all the way between Lewes and East Grinstead?
I'd like to say yes, but I think there are complications in the way, you know, with getting through Newark and Chailey station as it was, because this house had been built. So I think it's possible, but not in my time, I don't think.
That was twin brothers Roger and Ken Dudman, who live in Port Slade, and earlier Chris Cooper from the Bluebell Railway, all talking about the end of the sulky service, or the last British Rail train from East Grinstead to Lewes, that actually ran on Monday the 17th of March 1958. And staying on a railway theme, I recently met up with Gordon Rushton from the Five Bell Trust, who are working to restore the iconic Brighton Bell train to the main line. And I first asked him if it was a hard job.
Absolutely massive. Dennis Dunstone set up the Five Bell Trust, and the best way of dealing with raising money is to do it with a charitable trust. The Brighton Bell project is massive. It's six carriages in all to restore, and it's going to cost well over £6 million. And it's the sort of thing where you start off with reasonably optimistic views about how much it's going to cost and where you're going to get the money from, but by and large you end up spending more than you wanted. But in this case, the magnificence of this train is such that we think it's worth it.
Now, we're sitting in the Grosvenor Hotel in Victoria Station, where, of course, the train ran from.
It did. And there was a Pullman car, a very grand one, owned by the London, Brighton and South Coast Railway, called Grosvenor. A very, very splendid Edwardian affair. But this train is different. It ran from Victoria to Brighton. It was a train, a luxury train, put in by the Southern Railway in 1932 on the first mainline electrification in Britain. And that happened to be Third Rail, because it matched up to what had been going before. But they decided to put Third Rail. And there are probably many people who regret that decision when the snow comes down and their trains are all delayed. But nevertheless, it was very high-tech in 1932, and they decided that they would fit this train out to be completely Art Deco.
And Art Deco, for those that can't remember, how would you describe it?
Look at the Queen Mary, the first one. That's Art Deco. It's a wonderful follow-on from Art Nouveau, which is the fancy stuff that the French were so keen on. Art Deco was affected by the Bauhaus revolution in Germany, and it was a function and form fitment which gave you really interesting shapes, really interesting textures, and was very, very modern and avant-garde in the 1930s. And it's the sort of look that people just die for today.
When you said, right, we're going to restore this train, what have you actually had to do?
Well, it was really sad. I'm old enough to remember riding on the train. It wasn't a very comfortable ride, incidentally. One needs to just observe that. Don't be under any illusions. It bounced around. We left Victoria. We wondered why we got such wonderful service. We had everything before we left Victoria. And we soon found out by about Clapham Junction why that was so, because it bounced around terribly. But we decided that, despite that, it was very sad that the corporate won, hands down. New trains came in 1963, and this train disappeared in 1972. And everybody remembers it. And this is astonishing. To have a train that disappeared in 1972, you go around Brighton and you talk about the Brighton Bell, and they know what you're talking about. It's just utterly astonishing. So we thought, well, nothing was scrapped from this train. The 15 cars were 3 units of 5 cars each. Every one of them survived. And the poor old things had gone from bad to worse. And we thought, let's set about doing a restoration.
And what does that restoration involve? How much have you had to do?
Well, for a start, you've got really 3 things. The first thing is that after 80 years, the poor old girl needs a complete refurb. Because if you don't, corrosion will get to it. There are places where it looks like Belgian lace. And so, number one, get the thing corrosion-proof. Number two, it has to, if it's going to go... If you want to put it on a preserved railway, you can have it stuffed and mounted. But we thought, no, come on, we will accept a bit of a challenge here. Let's get this out on the rails, doing what everybody remembered he was going to do. And, you know, it was Brighton that helped us with that decision. So he thought, let's get on the rails. Well, of course, the authorities, when he went to them, they don't say no. They just say, well, if you want to do this, this is what you have to do. And that is a huge amount, because trains are really modern. But above all, the thing which everybody's worried about is, are they safe? And so we had to make it conform with all today's safety standards. And the third and last thing is, if we don't put this train back into proper, full Art Deco luxury condition, what was the point?
Absolutely. And what are you going to do with it when you've finished it, finished the restoration? Is it going to run between Brighton and London?
Yeah, occasionally it will run between Brighton and London. I don't think that's going to be its métier. I think what we're going to do with it is, the demand today is for people who want to rediscover rail travel as it should be. It's all very well commuting to work. It's very nice to be able to think But just occasionally, if you go to Burgess Hill and get on your train, it's A, going to be on time, and B, is going to deliver you on time. But, you know, it's a bit of a pain. Let's show that the real days of rail travel can be recreated and take people out for days out from the South Coast, from London, to nice places, and then give them a lovely meal on the return.
Now, not everywhere has got the third rail that you mentioned. Does that limit you to purely the old Southern Territory?
Yes, it does, in terms of what we think the correct operating arrangements are. Let's not be too adventurous. Poor old thing is 80 years old. We'll get it up to complete beauty and wonder, and we'll have it safe, and we'll have it running effortlessly. So we're going to start off by being on the third rail for most of the time. However, you'd be silly if you didn't fit into it the ability to be able to roam elsewhere, because I can see people wanting this to go to other places. So we talked to our splendid operators, GB Rail Freight, and they said, well, we've got some locomotives that we've refurbished and fitted out, which are compatible with this train. And so we fitted a way of being able to recess the pickup, the electric third rail pickup gear, and to put a diesel loco on the back, so that we can go to somewhere like Basingstoke and we can turn left and go up to Reading and we can drive the diesel from the Brighton Bell. And that's what we can do and will do in the future.
What sort of service will people get? I mean, by and large, apart from kippers for breakfast, by and large, the service for the passengers on the Bell was tea and coffee and champagne and drink.
We shan't be serving kippers for afternoon tea, but we'll certainly have kippers for breakfast. That has been a bone of contention. If it was good enough for Sir Laurence Olivier, it's good enough for our Brighton Bell passengers. If we go out from Victoria and we're going for a day out, we'll give you brunch, a nice breakfast, and get to a destination. Could be somewhere nice like Eastbourne, could be somewhere not quite in Sussex like Portsmouth, or even on a Sunday down to Weymouth. We'll take people, let them give them a time out, let them walk about, and then in the afternoon stroke evening on the way back we'll do a really splendid four course meal and get everybody back into London, if it's a London originating trip, get them back into London for the mid evening.
A few years ago, one of the coaches from the Brighton Bell was on display outside the Brighton Centre for the Brighton Model World exhibition. What's been happening since then?
Well, the thing is, the train has got to conform with the safe trains that currently run, and there have been a lot of hurdles to achieve what's called compliance with today's operating arrangements. For a start, we shall have this train normally operating 75 miles an hour, but it's quite capable of 90 miles an hour. And so that's a lot faster than it ever went in its life. So we don't want to frighten the old girl. So what has happened is something really quite surprising. And that is that the trains that kicked the Brighton Bell out, the ones that were replaced with the modern Siemens trains that run currently to and from Brighton, those trains, we bought about five of those, we stripped them all out, and we put all the gear to replace the 1932 stuff. And the authorities said, that is a good idea. You've put in a reliable, safe, well-operating, non-life-expired gear under that train, and you've given it now a smooth ride. So that going under there means an absolute mare's nest of wiring that you need to put in to get it all sorted out, electronic equipment to make sure that you conform, communications equipment, and that's taken far longer and cost far more money than we ever thought would be possible. And we haven't said a word yet about the interior restoration.
I was just going to talk about the interior restoration. Everybody will remember the lovely armchairs, the marquetry on the sides of the carriages, the ornate ceilings, the table lamps. Presumably all that had gone. So how do you recreate that?
Well, it hadn't gone, actually. But what had happened was that British Rail could not resist making it corporate. And it's terribly sad. It was all there. It was all faded. It was all over-varnished. You could see the Art Deco shouting to get out, but it wasn't really allowed because this was BR corporate. They even painted it grey and blue. It was a very sad thing to do because it stood out. Everybody said, I remember the Brighton Bell. You'd see it coming along and it was brown and cream. So we had to put that back. So the exterior had to be sorted out. Inside, well, take everything out, clean it up, and have a look underneath the grime. And the beauty is still there. Retrim everything. Put all the mouldings back. You can make it modern because better lighting today is actually LED lighting. You can get far more out of it and it takes practically no power. So we put that in. That's fine. It's not a problem. It looks the same. It's just that we've actually modernised it. But there were certain things that we had to do that, my goodness me, they were challenges.
Progress to date. Where are you with that?
Well, we have to do it all car by car. And what we confidently expected wouldn't be very difficult is turning out to be a bill of over £1 million per car. And there are people, very generous people, who so much want to see this train that they're prepared to stump up that sort of money and see it used for the public good. So we have gone and a bus company said to us, look, this material's a bit old. They were a railway bus company at one time in the Southern. And they had original material from the 1930s. So we found out who manufactured it, and we looked them up, and we found they were still there. In fact, they're a big name in transport fabrics. And we said to them, can we get some of this original pattern? Oh, yeah, sure, they said, certainly. You have to order, I don't know, so many metres of it. But, yeah, we still got it. In the first-class car Doris, which we bought, used to be on the Bluebell Railway, we found that all the Pullman armchairs were still there. All the Pullman lamps were still there, but wasn't the case for the other trains. So we had to go and make some lamps. Now, this is where you come up against some really exciting stuff. The height of 1932 sophistication was to make your lamps have plastic lampshades. And that is very F.W. Woolworth today. But nevertheless, we thought, no, these lampshades, opalescent lampshades, safe, with a safety certificate, we can still get. So we got them at 80 quid a go. We got them. And the lamp bases themselves, somebody said to us, oh, we could remanufacture those for you by part buy-in, part manufacture. So we reproduced the table lamps. Now that's the effort and lengths we've gone to try to get back to and make sure that this train comes out in proper Art Deco condition.
And when can we expect to see it, I was going to say, steaming, electrifying its way
sparking,
out of Brighton?
Sparking would be the right word, sparking. Well, the big thing we've got to get is we have to get these compliance issues absolutely right. So the braking and communication and the electrical control gear has all got to be right. This thing, when it gets going, we're expecting telephone calls to turn the wick down because it's going to go very quickly and very smoothly and very powerfully because it has to keep up with all the other trains on the Brighton Line. You can't have a situation where people are waiting for the poor old Brighton Bell. So when we got that right, we reckon it'll go for testing sometime during 2018. And just to make sure that we get it right, we're going to look at putting it in service, I would have thought, sometime in quarter three, sort of June time. We might get some nice weather, June time in 2019.
Hampson and Future programme, find out more about the restoration programme itself.
Well, perhaps you could come up, see the train and be there, because the restoration is now getting to its advanced stages, and there are these vehicles to talk about which are historic, and of course they're absolutely and totally linked with Brighton.
I was talking there to Gordon Rushton, who's a trustee of the Five Bell Trust, and the trust are hard at work on restoring our very own train, the Brighton Bell. And I, for one, can't wait to see those lovely brown and cream Pullman coaches back where they belong in Brighton Station. And that's just about it from me, Chris English, for this edition of At Home This Morning. However, let's remind you of the contact details for the Buddy Scheme at Chichester Festival Theatre. Telephone number is 01243 781 312, or you can email them at access, ACCESS, at cft.org.uk. Now, my colleague Richard Davis will be here for the next edition in a couple of weeks' time, and I'll look forward to being back with you in early May. So until the next time we meet over the airwaves, this is Chris English signing off with the message, stay safe, and remember Granny's old saying, never cast a clout till May is out. Thanks for listening to At Home This Morning, our programme for all our listeners, whatever your age.